Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Bergen County. This is John Inslin, a reporter at The Record. I cover county government and politics for the paper, and I'm here to welcome you to a very special edition of Record Talk Radio. This has been an ongoing series of conversations that we've been having over the last 3.5 years with newsmakers and journalists from northern New Jersey. Today, we've got kind of a historic preservation theme to our program. Last night, Bergen County honored 10 projects for the best historic preservation efforts of 2015. And you'll see a story about that in the paper today. You'll also see a great slideshow that my colleagues at NorthJersey.com put together on the winners. And we're going to talk to one of the winners today, a conversation I actually tape recorded yesterday with Tom Myers. He's the executive director of the Bergen County, the Fort Lee Film Commission, and they won for an award for a documentary they did on the early history of film in Fort Lee. But before we get to that interview, I'm being joined in the line here by Cynthia Forster, who is the director of the Bergen County Division of Cultural and Historic Affairs. Cynthia, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, John. It's certainly a great pleasure to be here and to tell you as much as I possibly can in the amount of time we have about what we do here.
Sure. Well, Cynthia, let's get right to it then. Last night was a lovely ceremony. I mean, an event.
Thank you.
You called the signature event of the historic preservation calendar at the Varick AME Church in Hackensack, which in and of itself was one of the winners of this
right. This
awards program. A really lovely church. I mean, I was just looking at the stained glass windows last night as the program played out. Just simple, elegant church, and it's still very much what it was back in 1919, a functioning congregation.
Right. Right. And we were so happy to be able to have it there. As you know, for the past number of years, we've had it at the Church on the Green, which is very close, of course, to the county courthouse and to the county office building, making it a lot easier, of course, to run an awards program. But because of the difficulty with parking, we knew we had to move it. And I think it's actually a good idea to move it. We need to highlight some of the other locations that we have in Bergen County that are also signature locations. And I think Varick was a wonderful place to put it because they were also celebrating, see? So why not put it there? And, of course, their congregation, I believe, started in 1864. So it was a great opportunity for us to go there, for people to see another beautiful old building, and to know it was a simple building, right? It was not one
exactly.
That was that certainly had the stone and had all the accoutrements, but it shows you so much about the growth of their own population and the growth of their congregation. So we were very happy. So
mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us last night.
Oh, sure, my pleasure. Tell me a bit about how these awards are determined. Who decides who wins?
Okay. Well, as we mentioned last night, this the awards program is part of what we do with our Historic Preservation Advisory Board. Now, the advisory board started in 1982, and we've had the awards since that time, actually, with a brief one-year hiatus last year. And so as I came on as director, I knew that it was time to keep going with these. It's very important for the community. But what in the amount of time that we've had, we have placed about 270 awards, we figure, since 1982. Last night, of course, we had 10, and usually it is around 10 because we have the various categories. Those categories were set up by the initial advisory board. And the advisory board actually was put together to do a number of things for this division. It looks at our historic open space grants. So they, when locations come in to try to get open space money to either become a national, to get on the national site registry, to do preservation plans, to do new roofs, et cetera, they come to us for that. And then we have to determine what are they doing. And we manage the program as well and take it to the main open space office. So that was the primary reason for the advisory board. It's also supposed to advise us on other things that we do, direction of the department, tell us about other things out in the community that we wouldn't necessarily know about, and plus do this awards program. So we're happy that they continue to do it. And as you could see last night, they are the ones who are primarily the speakers. I was just the intro, but then they are the ones who really keep it going.
Right, right, and they're very knowledgeable, each on their own topic.
Right.
Let's get into some of those topics. There were a couple outstanding ones, I thought. There's a young man named Matthew C. Yale. He's an Eagle Scout in Westwood. He took on a project, an Eagle Scout project, of repairing, restoring, and documenting an old well in Westwood. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
All right. Well, the old well was there in Veterans Memorial Park. I'm sure anyone who has been to Westwood really can't miss the park because it's right there where the train station is, et cetera. And every year, of course, we have this youth preservation project. We like to have it if someone comes forward to nominate someone for it. But the nice thing about that is, of course, getting younger people involved in what we're doing. But apparently for years, this old well was there. It was part of the initial homestead. And I guess there was some old tree growing out of it. They used it almost like a planter, you know. So, and that was, and so then they did do some research and found that in 1920s, this actually had a roof on it. So it was Matthew then working with someone who's on our advisory board, actually, Bill Martin, who is an architect in Westwood, who helped Matthew with this, to come up with a plan of how do you do it. And then, as you could tell from last night, he got a lot of other people involved with this. Then, you know, it wasn't just Matthew, but it was, of course, the whole, all the members of this Westwood Boy Scout Troop 47. You had the Westwood Heritage Society there. The mayor was involved, a councilman, Kukin Brothers, Emerson Fence. That's a very neat kind of project when you can get a whole community going. And now the well looks a little more like it looked initially. And I think as the wood ages, et cetera, yes, it's going to look a lot better. So,
well, you know, it's funny you mentioned the community building part of it.
Right.
Several of the projects had that component. The one I really was struck by was in Rutherford, where they created a living memorial wall in Sunset Park to veterans from that town who served, and some of whom died in World War One a century ago. Two women, Eileen Davis and Janet Mariano Murley, accepted the award for that project, or were singled out for the project. And that also, I gather, snowballed. It was a very touching description of how they researched all 600-plus people who served in the war from Rutherford in World War One, and then they did this extraordinary thing, I thought, which was to send a carnation and a card with the name of the person who served to the current address holder and invite them down to this memorial wall. It was just a neat way to kind of make people living in those homes now realize who came before them. But could you talk about that a little bit? Because I gather it started out with Eileen, and then she happened to meet Janet along the way.
Right, exactly. And this is a great example, I think, of reaching out to the community and letting the community know, hey, here is this is your history, you know, and you're in this house now, but wow, it had other people in this house who did these kinds of things. And actually, it's one of those kinds of projects that could be duplicated in all kinds of towns, not just in Bergen County, but obviously all over the place. But it was sort of a serendipitous kind of association in the fact that the two women that they happened to meet found out that one of them had certain skills, the other one had others, and therefore, you know, the one lived close to the park, And so that they decided to keep going on this and then eventually put up a whole display. This doesn't always happen. I think by giving them an award, we were citing them individually, but we were also citing all the other people who actually became involved in this. Because, as you know, it was more than two people then doing it. But they needed those management skills. They needed the focus that Janet could bring to it. And they also needed the work that Eileen had done. So we hope that this is a good example, again, for other towns to say, hey, we could get two people together. We could get a commission together, and they could actually work on a project that is meaningful. And I think this one certainly was then. And it lent a lot to Rutherford. And again, it's that connection of your present and your past. And that's really what it's all about. I've been going to some meetings at the New Jersey Historic Commission and about how they actually distribute their funding to different cultural organizations like such as ours, our division. And their recent consultants have said it's not so much just keeping a museum open. It's not just keeping the doors open. It's what are the demographics of who you're reaching and who are you reaching? It can't always just be the same group of people. This was a wonderful outreach then to the community. And hopefully by awarding them, it will go on then.
Good. Lucynthia, on the other end of that spectrum, you had an individual award, a very individual award for David R. Wall of Tenafly, where he's a member. He's actually chairman and longtime member of the Tenafly Historic Preservation Commission. What I found interesting about the write-up that you had on Mr. Wall was, you know, he'd written a lot about history in his town. He'd researched the cemetery. But he also did some fairly creative thinking on historic preservation. One thing, for example, he came up with something called a certificate of appropriateness, which I have to admit I'd never heard of before. You hear about a certificate of occupancy, but talk a little bit more about that. I mean, why did you honor him, and what was that about?
Well, all right, Tenafly, I think, has a very strong historic preservation commission. All towns, I shouldn't say all of them, because I'm sure that there are some that don't have historic preservation commissions, but most of them do. And those commissions, of course, vary by the town's needs, by what they're able to put together. I think Tenafly has always been one of those that you look to for a group that has really done it right, and they've put a lot of work into it so that when they look for properties to be listed then for historic preservation or on their own listings, they know that these properties are living up to certain standards. So Mr. Wall was actually one of those who started putting those standards together. Now, this is working in Tenafly, although it has taken him into some very controversial areas then. And it was very nice to see that someone is taking that on. Certain owners are not interested in being part of a historic district.
Right. Some owners actually fight the designation.
Right, they do. Stay because they're afraid of
making needed improvements.
Right. They're afraid of possible resale value going down because they have been part of this or whatever. I think historians and those involved in this know that that's not the case. All right? It really is a plus for your town to have a historic district. So Tenafly, I think, has put a lot of effort into showing that this works. And they've been willing also to put together a good ordinance that leads them in the right direction. We have actually Kevin Tremble, who lives in Tenafly, in one of the old houses. He was not there last night because I believe he was at a planning commission meeting for another old property in Tenafly, the Valley Hotel, which most of us, of course, know as the Charlie Brown's, has been closed for a number of years. But there has been some research to show that this was where Elizabeth Cady Stanton tried to vote. And it was actually our historian. Yes, she put that research together, mostly because there was a lot of hearsay about this, but where do you go? Now, right now, this property is being threatened. As a division, we can't come in and tell you what to do with your properties. That's not our mission. Our mission is to provide resources, et cetera. But again, through our historian, Janet Strom, she looked it up. She found this information. She then can give it to the commission or give it to the town, they then, of course, need to decide what to do with it. And I have yet to hear what might have been the outcome of that. I believe there was a planning board meeting last night, and I have not heard yet what has happened to that property.
Right. Well, you know, we'll watch
for that. Yes, and one thing, you know, we tried to stress last night was that the things that we were giving awards to, these were success stories. These are the ones that you want to play and tell people what wonderful things there are. Bergen County has also had some stories that were not success stories. We've lost homes here. We've lost the tenant house in Paramus, you know, after a major effort to try to move that stone house onto Bergen Community College's property. There are others that were also lost then, either because they might not have been on a historic site survey or whatever. I think David was a wonderful example, but another thing I'd like to point out is the house in Rochelle Park, the Captain William Tyson house, where you had a town taking this on to purchase this house, which most of us, if you have been down Passaic Avenue, you've seen this place. You know, it's this wonderful 19th century Italian villa. You're saying, what is this doing in the middle of this busy road? And the town has taken it on, and they're either in the process of, or they actually do have their certificate of occupancy yet to have that, and they're going to use it for town purposes, and they're saving it but giving it a second life that way.
Interesting. Well, Cynthia, that's about all the time we have for our conversation today.
Well, thank you.
Probably do this for a couple of hours, right?
Yes, we probably could.
But today we'll just leave it at that, because I do want to play for folks an interview that I did yesterday with Tom Myers of the Fort Lee Film Commission. That's really interesting. So, Cynthia, thanks for stopping by today.
Sure. And Tom, you know, we applaud Tom. His commission has been so good about keeping things going. And so it was another major success story. And thank you for having me.
You bet. Right.
Goodbye.
Folks, you've been listening to Record Talk Radio. That was a conversation I just had with Cynthia Forster, who's the director of the Division of Cultural and Historic Affairs for Bergen County, which oversaw the annual awards program last night in Hackensack. We're going to turn now to an interview I taped yesterday with Tom Myers, who's an interesting guy. He runs the Fort Lee Film Commission, and they had, well, it's not really a success story. It was, sadly enough, a loss of a piece of early film history in Bergen County that met the wrecking ball. So let's listen in on how they dealt with that. Here's that interview.
Well, Tom, first off, tell me what your reaction is on getting this, not you personally, but your organization, Fort Lee Film Commission, getting this award today.
It means a lot to us, because getting the award in and of itself is important to us, not so much for just getting an accolade, but we thought we had a story to tell, to try to preserve history that was born in Bergen County but has impact around the world in terms of early cinema. And though we lost the building we were trying to save, I think in the end we produced a documentary that hopefully will alert people about the fragility of the American cinema, whether it's actual film or whether it's actual structures that survive in New Jersey, Hollywood, and anywhere in between, New York City. So by getting this, it helps us tell our story to a larger audience. And that's what we want to do. We've had this film screened throughout New Jersey. It won the best homegrown documentary at the Garden State Film Festival in Atlantic City. It's going to be screened in Pordenone in Italy, where they have an annual silent film festival that's the largest in the world. And we hope to get it screened out in California eventually as well. And we're working with Milestone Video, which is a Bergen County, great couple, Dennis Doris and Amy Heller, who run it. They distribute a lot of independent cinema and silent film, important silent films. And so they are going to distribute this on a whole set of Fort Lee films. Some of the films we had to get in terms of the champion was the existing prints of films produced at that studio, which at the time it stood was the oldest standing studio in the country. There was only about a half dozen films left, and they were all in the Library of Congress. So we bought the digital copies of these films, and we integrated them into the documentary bits and pieces. But the DVD set will include all of them individually scored, and we just had an agreement with the Mount Alto Orchestra. They're one of the best orchestras to score silent films in the country. They're going to score another film that will be part of the DVD set. It's Robin Hood. It's the only existing print of the earliest surviving American film of Robin Hood that was made by Eclair Studio in Fort Lee in 1912, and that will be on the DVD set. So we're very happy with this award and what it means to the future of this documentary.
Speaking of the documentary, I'm always interested in how things get started. What was the genesis for this documentary?
Actually, a call from the Division of Cultural and Heritage Affairs out in Bergen County. At the time, the head of it was Carol Messer. She called me up, and she told me that the old Champion studio she heard was being sold. And that's just, unfortunately for us, it's just over the border in Angua Cliffs. All the primary source material we have indicates that it was in Coitsville. Coitsville is the northern section of Fort Lee. It goes back to, you know, the late 1890s, early 1900s, when all these towns started incorporating. We were part of Richfield Township. It's a long story. Long story short, the actual address is in Angua Cliffs. So,
but she calls you up and says they're selling it.
And what we did is we talked to people in Angua Cliffs. They had a new historical group up there, and we tried to see what we can do. We petitioned the mayor and council. We tried to contact LG, but in doing all this, we knew it was going to be a really long shot. We came off, this is on the heels of us in Fort Lee saving Rambo's Saloon, which was a building that dated to the 1860s, but very important in terms of cinema in Fort Lee. It was a unique way we saved it, and through the mayor and council and the housing authority. Unfortunately, we couldn't replicate that because this Angua Cliffs, not Fort Lee. So what we thought of is to apply for a history grant from Bergen County to do a documentary in hopes of saving the Champion. So we worked with the people of Angua Cliffs. They got us entry into, which was a Bill McPhail, the owner, ran it as a printing plant since about 1923 when they bought it from Universal Studios. So Bill was very gracious. Even though he was selling it, he knew the importance to document what was there. So he gave us entree, and we had a film historian that's a member of our commission, Richard Gazarski, who's a film professor at Rutgers University and considered one of the preeminent scholars of early American film. He found a portion of the original maps, and we found a wall on the northern section of the interior of the building. And we asked Bill about this because there were several doors and wallpaper, but there were just shelves in front of them. He goes, "They always were there. I have no idea what they were." And Richard looked at the maps, and that was the original dressing room wall.
No kidding.
So what we did when we knew it was coming down is we took one of the doors and part of the wall, and that was on display here last year, and we're going to put it on permanent display in our new film museum when we get it.
What is the significance to film, American film, of the Champion as a studio?
The Champion is unique because it really was the birthplace of Universal Studios. So the Champion was the first studio built in Fort Lee. Remember, when the American film industry started, it was in a tar paper shack called the Black Mariah in West Orange, New Jersey in 1893, first studio with Thomas Edison. By the early 1900s, they were shooting in the studios that were born after that were shooting in brownstones on East 14th Street. They were shooting on rooftops. With the introduction of the subway system, they would go up to 125th Street across the river, take a trolley, come to Fort Lee. Before they even had a studio here in 1907, 8, and 9, it was a gigantic back lot. They could shoot any Main Street USA movie, short movie on Main Street, action-adventure on the cliffs, and in the Coitsville section, westerns. 1910, Mark Dittenfest decides it's too much of a drag to keep going back and forth. He builds this studio called The Champion, and that's the first studio. By 1912, lots of other studios being built, including the Solax, Eclair, and by 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, you have dozens of studios here, including the Fox. Now, 1912, Carl Laemmle, who shot his first film for a company he owned, Independent Motion Picture Company, IMP, and I think it was 1909. It was called Hiawatha. He shot it in Coitsville. So he knew of, by 1910, Mark Dittenfest, and he decided to buy the Champion. And when he bought the Champion studio, it came under the title Universal Studios. That was the first home to Universal. Universal made films out of there through 1915. By 1914, he was building what would be, for a short period of time, the largest studio in the world on Main Street called Universal Studio. And then by 1916, he went out to California, 1915, 1916, and leased that studio and the Champion. The studio up on Main Street lasted until 1931 when they sold it, and then it became a film storage facility, and the studio was torn down in 1964. But the Champion was sold by Universal in 1923, and the reason it survived for over 100 years or almost 100 years. It survived more than 100 years, but as a printing plant, it lasted because it was built not to look like a studio. They built it because they wanted to evade Edison's Pinkerton agents who were coming up here enforcing his patents. So they built it to look like a factory. And that's why when Universal sold it, a printing plant went in there, and it was a factory.
Okay,
instead of
good.
Film, it was printing.
Okay, and what does it look like now? I haven't driven by there. What's left?
Pretty much, if you see the end of our film, you'll see what's left. I don't want to give anything away, but the ending of our film is very star.
Say spoiler alert here.
Boom! Yes, spoiler alert. There is just a sign saying private property and gravel, and that's it. There's no marker, nothing to indicate that this was the first studio built in the Fort Lee area, nothing to indicate this was the first home.
And there you have it, folks. He was about to say the first home of Universal Studios, and I'm afraid I cut that bit off. Well, fascinating conversation. You can find more on Tom Myers and his project in a story in today's paper. You can find out more about the other 9 winners as well in a slideshow at northjersey.com. So stay tuned to Record Talk Radio for upcoming broadcasts. Stay tuned to the Bergen Beat blog for everything that's going on in the county and northjersey.com. And, of course, tomorrow's record for all your county news. Till then, folks.